pretty excited about this.
All right. I'm in.
So, as you know, Clifton and I have been talking about a podcast for a little while, and this whole coronavirus thing has got us all going a little bit cabin feverish kind of thing. So Clifton and I have been talking.
Opportunist.
Yes, I'm being an opportunist, exactly. So everyone's everyone's social distancing, self-isolating, or even in quarantine or what have you. So, you know, I've always thought about...
supposed to be.
Yeah, or supposed to be.
Except
I know.
Mouth breathers.
I was out today getting some groceries. I left the grocery store. They had to give me a second cart to get everything out of the store. So I might have went a little crazy.
But now you don't have to go back.
That's right. Well, unless I need toilet paper because there was none today. So,
that's crazy. That's what they're keying in on. That's most important in all of this.
I don't know. So we're all stuck here at home, and I've always thought it'd be cool to talk about what people's I call them your desert island, but that's no longer the case. So your quarantine albums. If you were stuck with only five albums in quarantine, which five albums would you go with here? So Trevor Sitnick, Trevor here is our first guest, and he's given us some fantastic ones. I did my homework. Clifton, did you do your homework at all?
I did not. No. I kind of thought, you know what, I'm going to come into this with nothing and see where it takes me.
You know, you just say an open heart. That's what you say when you haven't done your homework. I'm coming in with an open heart.
Yeah. Coming in with an open heart. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Well, Cam asked, he's got some pretty intense questions here. I felt like I had to go back to school.
I apologize.
I did some of my homework. I'm one of those kids that could BS the presentation. So
absolutely.
I feel like
that's
I
why
could,
you're the first.
Yeah, I could kind of make it through this.
That's why you're the first person on here, because I know you can BS your way through it. So
yeah.
So, but
teachers,
you know what?
Teachers love those kind of kids.
Yeah, and we can spot them too. Okay, so now you never did give me a fifth one. You gave me four. You gave me Bruce Springsteen's Thunder Road.
Or Born to
Stones,
Run,
Exile on Main Street.
Yeah.
Oh,
Born to Run.
Born to Run, right. Yeah, sorry. Tom Petty's Echo.
Yeah.
And Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde. But you were kind of stuck on which Guns N' Roses one you wanted to go. So have you made a decision?
Well, I guess I would just go with one of the Use Your Illusions, probably Use Your Illusion 1. I don't know if you're allowed to count both because they're separate records technically.
Well, actually, I do want to bring that up. I noticed that you managed to put on a couple of double albums.
So, is that cheating?
Clifton, is that cheating? Double albums.
That is a good question.
I kind of came in and broke the rules right off the start.
Yeah,
right
off the bat. I'm not surprised.
We better get used to that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know what? There's no rules. We're in quarantine. We're, you know, as long as you stay in your home, who cares, right?
When you're talking rock and roll, there's bound to be some.
Clifton has never been one to follow the rules.
Breakages.
I don't know if people know this out there that might be listening. There might not be anybody going to listen. I don't know. Clifton and I play together in a band, and we always follow Clifton. And when the joke is, we never know how a song's going to end because Clifton hasn't told us yet. So, or how long it's going to run, right?
Just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Just keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
So Trevor, do you want to just pick one there, and or like, you know, I'm not making you give them an order or nothing, but
no,
just pick one.
So I guess, what do you want to do? You want to do, you know, Exile on Main Street, I'm sure. Cam, at least. I know you. Yeah.
Well, so, Clifton knows it because he's got my vinyl copy. So
you bet. It's a great album.
It is a great album. I listened to it in the car. I had to drive to Winnipeg last week, and it's a fantastic.
It's a pretty, like, full album. It's got so much diversity on it, too. I mean, there's, like, deep blues songs, and there's, like, some of the best country songs ever are on this rock and roll album. There's actually, like, a shortage of rock and roll songs on it for a Stones album. It comes out swinging. It comes out swinging really big, right? It's got, I think, like, Rip This Joint and Rocks Off, and those are two big rock and roll songs. And then after that, it's basically blues and country with a bit of soul for the whole rest of the album. And it's funny because, like, my favorite, like, Some of my favorite country songs are by the Rolling Stones. My favorite, like, disco song is by the Rolling Stones. Yeah. Like, they're just like, we'll just write a couple really good songs of whatever genre we want, and they'll be, like, some of the best ones, and then we'll also make some hits and, you know, put on a show.
So Trevor, what would you consider, or what do popular, what do people consider the hits off this album?
Oh, God, I guess... Tumbling Dice was a popular song.
Tumbling Dice is one that's on there. That's a top 10 worldwide. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe Keith Richards singing Happy, because I think that was kind of a popular song.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I've listened to it a couple times, and you really got to, like, I hear Mick on there. Like, you really got to listen hard to hear Keith.
Oh, he's singing the verses, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we got yeah. Right? He sounds like a stabbed cat or something.
I think he's a better singer back then than he is now, though.
Well, he's a better singer than Mick Jagger was, for sure. Huh? All the hard parts in all of their songs, like all of the tough harmonies and all the really good background vocals before they hired more and more people, it was all Keith singing those like upper fifths that are like way harder than what Mick was singing. Mick's like cooler and got a good inflection, but I think Keith Richards was like in the like Royal National Boys Choir until his voice broke.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then he got like kicked out because his voice cracked and he wasn't like a super soprano or something. Like, he's a really high technical singer until he got really high and technically can't sing anymore.
Or until he started smoking as a 14-year-old.
Yeah, but he's a pretty phenomenal singer, and he carries them. Every time a chorus sounds big in a Rolling Stones song, it's because it's him singing in the back. Like, he makes everything big. I don't know if you've ever sung with a really good backing singer, but you hit the chorus and all of a sudden, just like someone just jumps
everything
up.
Fills up.
Yeah, it like hits you. Like,
I'm going to have to listen again.
I think the best like deep cut is probably...
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
Oh, man, that's tough. I mean, Shine a Light is a really great song, and Sweet Virginia. Probably Sweet Virginia is probably my favorite song off the album. I don't think it's really a hit, but it's got great saxophone in a country song.
I prefer the Sweet Virginia off the Stripped album, which was out in
92, 93 kind of.
Yeah, something like that. I like that version of it, but Rocks Off spoke to me, the opening one there. I love the horns on that opening track.
Yeah, I mean, that's one you just can't really recreate. Like, I always want to do songs from this album, but some of them are just impossible to cover. Like, I don't know how you do Rock Offs. You need four different people singing different parts and screaming, and a sax player and a piano. And like, it's just like, it's intense.
Yeah, you need 27 people.
Yeah, it's a studio thing.
All right. So if you had to pick one, Trevor, I'm gonna nail you down here. Okay. If you had to pick one for someone that's never really, you know, they know all the Stones hits, but they haven't really listened to Exile. If you had to pick one, you got to listen to this one. Which one would it be?
Shine a Light.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say Shine a Light. So I'd say that's a damn good song.
And now, what about this album then? Like, is it like, does it bring back any memories, or is there any lyric or anything like that, or
memories? It was just so eye-opening here. This is my first Stones album that I really listened to as an album. I like, everybody knows every Rolling Stone song and all the hits and stuff, and I started getting more and more into their albums as I started writing more music. And this one, it was just like, it was such a musical journey. It was like you're going on a road trip with the Stones. I don't know.
That's a good description. It is a bit of a road trip.
It goes everywhere. That's why it doesn't matter what you're feeling like, there's gonna be something. Like, it's everything they do well on one album. Rock and roll, blues, country, soul, ballads. Like, it's...
Well, that's a double
album. You get a good idea of what the Rolling Stones are on this album.
Yeah, and at the same time, not a lot of... Like, there's no big hit, which is pretty cool. It's pretty cool that their best album is almost void of, like, a monster stadium hit. And this is, like, probably their... I think Sticky Fingers might be a better album for me. But this is just a much... better overall album. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was tough picking between this and Sticky Fingers, but there is an era from Sticky Fingers and Let It Bleed and Beggar's Banquet and what else was in there. But there was about five albums there from 68 to 72 where it was just, they couldn't do anything wrong. Like, it was just, it was impossible.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Great. So let's pick another one here. Which one do you want to talk about next?
Well, let's go with an underdog here. Echo by Tom Petty.
Okay, sure. Sounds good.
I don't think anybody would probably even think of Echo as the Tom Petty album for them, but
if you get online, a lot of people talk about how Echo is something that really speaks to them.
Okay.
But you're right, it's very similar to Exile in that it doesn't have a lot of the Tom Petty hits, you know. It's one of his later albums. I know it's 2000 or 2001, something like that.
Yeah, 99, 2000, yeah.
99, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not one of the sort of the old classic Tom Petty's, so there might be some people that sort of drifted away, but I did some research, it sure seems a lot of people do appreciate Echo, but it's not your typical early Petty album.
I think it's just if you really love Tom Petty as a lyricist and an art, more as a person than a perform. I don't know. It's just it's a very personal album.
Yeah.
And really well played. And I don't think many people can make things sound better. Like if you go to a Tom Petty concert, which we have, like, I just don't think that there's many better sounding band. Like they just know how to make sound.
That they are a very good sounding band.
Yeah. And nothing gets in the way of anything, and you can hear it. And this album's just so, it's just so pure sounding, and you hear everything for how you want. But he was going through just
this was a lousy time, wasn't it?
Yeah, divorce, and then his bass player like was killing himself at this point.
Yeah, he was in some bad shape here. Yeah,
yeah, and I think it just was devastating him because there was nothing they could do for that guy, and he eventually died. He's supposed to be on the album cover.
But he didn't show up for the photo shoot, and Petty just said, "Forget it, take the picture, and let's go." Right,
and that was kind of signaling, like that was foreshadowing in some ways. I think,
if you look at that album cover, and I could be wrong here, but I don't see Steve Ferrone, the drummer, on that album cover. But I'm not sure. Maybe he wasn't. Was he part of the band at that time?
No, he wasn't officially yet.
Oh, okay, so he wasn't an official member yet. So that's
he was an official member after their anthology came out, I think.
Okay. Yeah, but, I know that story about how he just didn't show up and they just went. And you can see, to me, you look at that album cover, you can kind of see the sadness and the hurt that's in those guys and you know, what's going on in their lives kind of thing. So.
And he's making really beautiful art about pain. Like, that's like my favorite subject. Like, I don't like happy songs. I don't like happy music. I think if you got something happy to say, you might as well just shut your damn mouth and go be happy. Like, just go, if you're already happy, just go be happy, because it's so rare, you know? So when you got something miserable that I can relate to, come and talk to me, write a song, work it out. But that's just my opinion of
it. Is that what you want in your isolation, your quarantine cuts?
Yes, I don't think happiness is a fleeting thing.
Each their own. Remember, you're stuck with these five for
I know. But I think this album just I think Howie is, he's my favorite bass player ever by far, and he's not even technically a bass player. He was a guitar player, and Tom Petty just liked him. He's like, "You want to play bass?" And it's like, "Okay." Yeah. And he happens to be like a musical wizard, could play anything, and
he was a producer as well too. I was looking at another album, and I didn't realize he was the producer on it. Just
huge musical background. Married to Johnny Cash's daughter.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
But he is, I would say, I think he might be the best background singer I've ever heard. For me personally, I think he's probably my favorite backing vocal singer ever.
Not just say the same thing about
him or Keith? That would be it. And it's like, what a dumb thing to like about a band is the background singer that sings in the choruses. Huh? But Howie, if you watch some of those live at the Fillmore or the High Grass Dogs, he's, the bass lines aren't anything to be writing home about. They're not, they're not deadly, but they're just solid, and just everything's so pure, and his vocals are just beautiful. Just beautiful singer. Compliment. You always need a singer that can sound very close to the lead singer.
Yeah.
That's a really key in being a good background singer. You got to be able to imitate the lead singer better than anybody else. Because everybody in a crowd kind of wants to believe that it's just the lead singer singing two voices.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's what the audience, they don't associate background personality singers. You want another version of the lead singer doing a harmony.
Unless it's obvious, unless you got like a...
Yeah, unless you're one of those show-off harmony eagles or something, or those people all... Blech.
Yeah.
As soon as you...
No, I'm thinking about... when they bring in the session vocalist to the back.
And it sounds like almost fake. It sounds like it's too good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, any harmony singing where, like, this is just my opinion again, but any harmony singing where you're like, or any musicianship where you, like, are telling people that you're good at what you're doing, like, just die. Go away. I don't care that you're good at playing the guitar. I don't care about your stupid hi-hat groove or, like, shut up. Make a great piece of art. Make a great piece of art. Punch me in the chest. You know, and get on with it. Not this musical masturbation stuff. Once anybody knows you're good, it's like the gimmick's over.
It should be then you move on, right?
It should be effortless. It should just be fluid. So
that's what this band was.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it, actually. Yeah.
You've given people another reason to go back and have a listen to it now if they've never paid any attention to those background details.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. It's a quiet album. It's not a popular album. It's not one that you hear.
It's not a rocker.
For me, it was this or, I guess, what's the chill one right before Wildflowers, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one or this one.
That's a good one.
Two for me, but I think this one just was more personal. There's some really...
It's because it's sad. It's sad. You like sad.
I guess so.
Did you know too that the hit off this album, the single, is Free Girl Now? It's the second single by a major artist to be made available for free internet download, and his label Warner Brothers was quite upset with him.
I did not know that. Yeah, he liked making everybody mad.
Yeah, well he was fighting,
especially
with
the record labels.
Yeah,
he was fighting with the labels from when he was like just a first artist, right? Like just very young.
Yep, he got in one of those bad contracts too, and then
It's
funny because I have Born to Run here after, and it was the same thing with Springsteen, where it was just this nightmare of, is this ever actually going to come out? Because and Petty got in one of those jams too, where they were going to hold it forever just to end his career, and didn't he have an album too where he was going to name it $7.99?
Yes, because he was mad that was the CDs, I think, right? That they were upping the price, and so he was going to name it $7.99 so that they couldn't charge $8.99. Or you got to respect that. That's.
Do you ever listen to Pearl Jam? I don't really like Pearl Jam that much.
No, I'm not. I know Clifton is, but
I just like, so him and Eddie Vedder were buds, I guess, or whatever, and they did some They did some stuff together, but I was listening to Eddie Vedder on a podcast yesterday, on the Bill Simmons podcast, and he sounds exactly like Tom Petty when he talks. It's like, it's actually terrifying because you think it's Tom Petty giving an interview. It's really weird. If you ever get a chance to listen to it, it's kind of surreal because it sounds like he's speaking to you from the grave or something.
Cool.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway. Pearl Jam, they just released another album too.
I've heard it's very good too.
I haven't listened to it yet, but it's on the list.
Yeah, we'll have time.
So you mentioned the Springsteen album. Let's talk about that one.
Sure, Born to Run. That's just that's just a masterpiece of an album.
Are you going to put these albums 1 to 5 after?
Ooh.
I don't know if I'd be. I will try. I could try. I could try.
Okay.
I could try.
Okay. So this is Bruce's third album, right?
Yeah. This was the big one.
Yeah.
This and probably Born in the USA are his two biggest albums.
Yeah.
And they're both they're very different, but both kind of genius in some ways. I don't know. This album to me it's kind of like perfection. It's, I don't know. I don't know what else you could do. Like, he says a lot. I think there's only 8 songs of this album, maybe 9.
Yeah, it's
eight
really
songs.
Short.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a short album and it's just like lyrically, because he kind of was in this like dictionary phase before this, where everything was a tongue twister that he was trying to sing, and he kind of eased up just a little bit on this album, and did a little bit of a less is more kind of lyrical approach where he didn't spell it out as much, but he still he couldn't help but spell it out a little bit because he's Bruce Springsteen and he's got a lot of words to say. So
from 79, I never. It's always neat to see that he started out that early, and this is his third album.
Yeah, I think this is 70. Is it 79? I think it might be.
I believe 79. Okay. Oh, sorry, 75.
Began working 74. Yeah.
It's right in that mid to mid late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this
1975 it was released.
Yeah, there was a lot of pressure on this album too. This was kind of make or break. He was going to like, because he was on the cover of Newsweek or Time or something at this point before the album came out, I think.
Yeah,
and it was like the future of rock and roll. And he's like, oh great, yeah. No pressure, right? Like,
whose famous quote is it that said, "I've seen the future of rock and roll, and it's Bruce Springsteen"? Who said that? Do you know?
That's his manager.
Oh, is it?
Because he was a writer. He was, what's his name, Landau or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was a writer for Rolling Stone, and he quit his job to become his manager because he said,
"Oh, okay,
this is it. Like, this is." He literally quit his musical journalism job, I think. To be his manager, because he was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm good. I've seen what I want, and this is going to be it.
Now, there's a one lyric, too, where he talks about the big man joining the band. Of course, Clarence Clemons, right? 10th Avenue
Freeze Out.
Yeah, but is this the first album that Clarence Clemons plays on? I'm trying to find it here, but...
Nope. He's playing... Well...
Doesn't look like...
He plays before... But this is a song about them meeting up, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he's kind of
retelling
the story. Yeah, that's a great song, too.
As Bruce tends to do, he tells stories, right?
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Yeah, this whole song, this whole album is just stories, realistically. Like, I don't... There's a couple that are kind of a ballad, I guess. Like, She's the One. That's kind of about a woman. Other than that, they're all tales. They're all... shady characters doing shady things, and like that meeting across the river is like I'm gonna go kill someone tonight, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm gonna throw the money on the bed, and you know, we're gonna have it made, darling. Like, oh, that's gonna go well. that's gonna go well.
So I think you got left off, or I let you off without asking for a deep cut off Echo, but give me a deep cut that people got to listen to off
Echo?
Off this one.
Oh.
Well, okay. Let's go back to Echo. Well, give
Echo,
me a deep
it's
cut off
One More Day, One More Night on Tom Petty's Echo. That's when it drops into the hold on, one more day, hold on. It doesn't do that till way later in the song, but once it hits that, it's like a whole new song too, and it's just, oh, it sucks the air right out of the room when it literally, the volume drops, and it's almost like a vacuum for like just... It's pretty cool. It's pretty wild. Big moment. Cool. Big moment. It's a great way to end the album, too.
Okay, so what about the Springsteen one?
I guess Jungle Land. Jungle Land or Meeting Across. I think Jungle Land is one of his, like, masterpieces of a song.
Okay.
It's just super poetic, Americana, slice of life. Pretty. It's like a symphony, right? It's like a masterpiece. It even has some, like... orchestral kind of, it's 9 minutes, like he doesn't spare any words for sure.
It's like it's an opus.
Yeah. cool. he goes all in on it, but it's poetry set to music, basically. Yeah, all these different characters and everybody's meeting out in Jungle Land tonight, you know, and it's pretty wild. I think the best song though is it's Thunder Road, and that's not even close. That's
the number one song on the album, you think?
It's just one of the better. It's a perfect song.
Yeah.
He talks about Roy Orbison. It's over. You win. You can slide a little Roy Orbison in there and you're good, you know? And not in a pandering way. Not like, I like Roy Orbison and Johnny Cash and Chuck. And it is none of that pandering. It's just like a, hey, Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Like, come on. Oh. Done. It's like desperate. It's not like pandering. It's well done.
Cool. Not name dropping.
Yeah, no, it's an emotion. Like you're saying it to feel something, not saying it to be like, I know who Roy Orbison is. Yeah.
I met him. Yeah. For what it's worth, I really enjoyed the bass line on Backstreets, but I don't know what that's worth.
That's a great tune.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this album's just very poetic. Thunder Road is... the lyrics on that are just like that's the best intro to a story. Like, what, how does the screen door slams and Mary's dress waves like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Shut up. Like, I don't even know how you do that. The screen door slams. That's super visual. And you can yeah. It's a rusty screen door. Mary's dress.
You can hear it.
And there she is, this Mary. And it's always Mary. It's got to be Mary all the time in all yeah. the stupid songs. Like a vision, she dances across the Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me. And I want you only. Don't turn me home again. I just can't face myself alone again. Ugh. Ugh. It's like a love song. It's this epic love song that does. It's not some stupid ballad. It's an epic love story of these two people, right? That are just desperate.
Does Mary know that? Do you think?
Well, he's trying to get her to hop on that motorcycle.
Yeah.
That's all he wants. Let's get the hell out of here. You know, we got one chance. It's a desperate song, definitely.
I definitely gotta go back and listen.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta go back and listen to these again, I think.
Oh, his lyrics on this are perfect. This helped me move out of Dauphin and move to Toronto for sure. This
song. Yeah.
For sure. Listen to this song, pack my car, move to Toronto. Here
yeah.
we go.
That's how music moves you.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's ruined my life multiple times. It's great.
You got to write that lyric down, Trevor. That's a great lyric.
Well, it's ruined my life multiple times.
Yeah.
that's not bad.
If you don't, Clinton's going to write it down.
There you go.
Use it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay, so let's look at Bob Dylan's masterpiece.
Yeah, and that's just he's Bob Dylan, and I don't know, he's smarter than everyone. So I don't know. It's like Blonde on Blonde, right?
Yeah, Blonde on Blonde.
And that totally. Was in another one of those springs of albums he was putting out. He was doing. I think he did.
This was the third one, I think, right?
Yeah, out of Highway 61. He had more. He had earlier ones, but this was in a really big. You know how it's always in these runs of records where these great ones, and this one was this album's stupid. Musically it's cool. It's got really good players, but nobody's allowed to play really well on it.
Right,
intentionally, like that's not going to happen. Nobody's yeah. going to. Yeah,
Robbie Robertson from the band plays on.
Yeah,
yeah. Actually, if you do a little bit, I did some reading, and Bob was having a hard time finding musicians to play with him. He just didn't like the sound that he was getting, and they kind of went through quite a few people trying to get whatever he wanted.
Yeah, he went to Nashville.
Yeah,
for this. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He got a bunch of ringers, but he wouldn't let them kind of play too much. Like he wanted it pretty simple, and like sometimes even where it's like intentionally bad playing. On one of my favorite songs, like that leopard skin pillbox hat. The intro is just this blues intro, and it's just like a Telecaster on the brightest, ear-piercing setting, kind of almost out of time and slightly out of tune. And that's like the opening riff with the band that sounds like it's like a, I don't know, like a rope bridge that's like fallen and all the boards are falling into each other at the same time.
Wow.
That's what the band sounds like, you know.
And
he's doing these bright guitar tones over the top of it. It's just a train wreck. It's great. It's a great intro. It suits the song, but like those guys, like these are some, I don't know if they're the same guys that like Elvis would have got when he had like his, what was it called? The Million Dollar Band in the 70s when he was doing karate and stuff. He had like the best, the best drummer in the world at the time was playing drums for him. And like Ronnie Tutt and the best guitar player in the world, arguably at that time, session wise was playing. He had all these guys. That's kind of what Dylan had on this. He had all these guys who
all-stars.
Were just phenomenal, but he wasn't going to let them. He just wanted a good groove. It's kind of, if you ever get a chance, I'd highly recommend, you remember G.E. Smith?
Yeah. Yeah. From Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Right. Have you ever watched any of those YouTube things?
No.
Okay. It's worth checking out. I thought G.E. Smith kind of sucked personally. He's kind of a showboater, but I guess he had like 3 seconds.
Flashy.
Yeah. Three seconds before a commercial break. So he always had to kind of do something. Right. But, man, that guy's been there and done there. He's done it all. But he talks about on one of the, I think it's from the American Institute of Film or the American Institute of Film and Television, did 2 hours of segments recording them for their archives because he's played with so many people. And
oh, is that right?
Oh, he's an amazing interview. I highly recommend them. But he does one where he talks about, he's already pretty famous at this point. And but some guy's at a restaurant, he says, hey, Bob's coming into town tomorrow. And he just wants to jam.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, okay, that's pretty cool. Bob Dylan wants to jam with us. He's like, so get a group together and just be at this rehearsal place at 11 o'clock. So they're all there 3 hours early, tuning and getting ready. And he's cleared out the whole rehearsal space. You know, like nobody other. It's a big rehearsal building. I don't know if you've ever been to a rehearsal building, but it's a weird world. But the whole place is empty, not a sound in this giant. Like, it's normally their factories that are turned into rehearsal spaces with like industrial locks. So they're just waiting here, all tuned up, ready to roll, nervous as hell because it's Bob Dylan, you know, and they're all still pretty young. They're super successful, but he's still Bob Dylan. Yeah. And he comes in, doesn't say anything, tunes it, and they're playing for, I think he says it's like a couple hours and nothing's clicking. And then he picks, I can't remember the name of the song, some really obscure 19th century war song or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you guys know this? And they're like, yeah, we do. And he's like, what? and so they start playing this and then they jam for about 3 hours. And the next day he gets a call. Yeah, you're hired. He's like, what? He's like, you're his band now. He's like,
they didn't know they were auditioning.
No idea. They said, you know, he just, oh, what was the name of the song? It's not Hey Rosie or something. It's the name of a girl or something. And he said, you're the only band ever, when he asked to play that song, that's ever known it. And he said, from that moment, you were hired. And it was just because he was his job to learn. He was a music historian, right? G.E. Smith and all these guys. It's a really good interview, but he's just all about not too much rehearsals, just wants it to feel right, and then let's go, you know? And never plays the song the same way. If you're playing live with Bob Dylan, he'll play the song in different keys, in different times, in different rhythms. He'll change the song halfway through. We'll just
you gotta be along for the ride.
Yeah, you never know what he's gonna do. He's kind of off
sounds
on another
like,
planet.
Sounds like somebody I know.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Clifton.
Oh, I don't even want to know, but that's great. But anyway, Blonde on Blonde, I would say is lyrically the best. I don't know, probably the best album. I would say it's like, I don't know, I'm an English guy. I'm an English major, and my favorite poem is super nerdy, and this is like my favorite poem of rock and roll for an album, I would say.
What are the, like, if someone's not a Bob Dylan fan, and there are some people, what are the hits that are on this album?
There's some songs that people might know. Yeah. I Want You, I think. That's kind of a popular song. I think Johnny Cash did a cover of that made it kind of famous. I Want You. What else is a famous song? Well, Rainy Day Women 12 and 35.
Yeah. Like,
right, Everybody Must Get Stoned, right?
Yeah, I think everyone, or Just Like a Woman's on this one too, I think.
Yeah, and Just Like a Woman is another one. Yeah. So I'd say I Want You, Rainy Day Women, Just Like a Woman. Is there anything else that's really big? No, I'd say that's it. Yeah, that's the ones that people might know. Oh. Rainy Day Women might be the biggest well-known one, and Just Like a Woman,
The one I really enjoyed was Absolutely Sweet Marie.
Yeah, what was it about that song that you dug?
I liked the organ sound on that. It reminded me of Booker T and the MGs.
Yeah.
In fact, I had to look to see if it was Booker T himself, because I was like, oh, that sounds just like him. But
cool tone, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome.
I liked, I'd say Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat or Visions. Well, Visions of Joanna is the better song. That's like one of the best lyrical songs I've heard, but Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat is just a smart ass song. It's just a real wise guy train wreck of a song. And I think he says in it, that mattress balances on, no, that hat balances on your head like a mattress balances on top of a bottle of wine or something. It's just like, oh, done. You win. He's just a jerk, I think. He's just a mean guy. he's a nasty person, I think. Like, I don't think he's lyrically very kind to anyone.
Have you ever seen Bob Dylan smile?
I've seen him chuckle a couple times. No, but not really. He doesn't really smile. Yeah.
That's why you like him. Mm. Right? You don't like that happy stuff.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, he's a poet. Like, he's a savant. He's not quite all there in some ways. Like, he does stuff and nobody kind of even understands. Like, did you hear he just put out that song about Kennedy?
I haven't heard it, but I've heard about it. Yeah,
yeah, it's like 18-minute song about the assassination of John Kennedy, with 750,000 references to historical events in like one words and sentences that are all like basically if you had to annotate every line of his song, you'd need 200 pages to get all of the references in every lyric of this song. Like, it's just full of reference, and only he's gonna write something like a stupid 18-minute song about JFK, you know. And
yeah,
it's just for himself, I think. But I don't know. He's like, if you know who T.S. Eliot is, T.S. Eliot wrote The Wasteland, and it's one of those things that you need an encyclopedia when you read it, because every third word you're gonna have to look up, and it's gonna be a reference to a Greek play that you got to read the whole play to get there. And it's like one of those. That's kind of Bob Dylan in some ways. Like, you can get it on one level, you can get it on like another level, and then you can get it on a like, you got 3 weeks to like think about this. And then of course, if you ask Bob Dylan about it, he'd laugh at you like you're an idiot. He'd be like, "That's you're overthinking it." Like, there's some great interviews where reporters are like, "What does your album cover mean? It must signify something." He's like, I don't even really remember taking it, man. You know, I was on the steps and I liked my t-shirt, so I said, take a picture, you know? And some guy has just spent 4 weeks writing his master's thesis on the album cover or something, right? So don't overthink it at the same time.
It's good advice, I think. Don't overthink it. All around. Okay, let's go to your last pick here. Now, you've got, how many double albums you got here? You got Exile, Lon and Bon are both double albums.
Yeah.
And now you've gone with Guns N' Roses. Not technically double albums, but
Use Your Illusion.
What's the story
one
behind?
The story is they took this huge hiatus from writing after putting out one of, because they released Appetite in 85 or something, and it didn't do anything for like 2 years. It was just a nothing, and then all of a sudden, kaboom! And then they're super famous, you know, opening for the Stones and playing with Queen.
87 Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah, yeah, and they just become huge all of a sudden, right? And they're just they're a disaster as humans. They're just a train wreck. And then they keep touring and touring and touring and touring. And I think there's 5 or 6 years before maybe five years before they put out an album, which if you're like the biggest rock band in the world,
what are you doing?
And you're not making albums, you're kind of losing money. I think there's almost 5 years between that, right? And it's like, that's insane when you're talking peak 80s, 90s, hit-making, money-making, peak of excess rock and roll band stuff. Like, you got to make an album. And they just kind of had this backlog of songs from even before Appetite and all the, and they just kept chipping away. They tried to make it, but they couldn't quite make an album. And they kept going from city to city, adding more songs here and there. And all of a sudden, it was just a big mumble jumble of 20-some songs, right? Just
Why is it not a double album? Why is it like two separate albums?
Because they could get more money, I think.
Oh, yeah?
I think a double album is normally, you know, a double album is $20, whereas two single albums are $15 and $15 or something, you know, right? So it was just a, and I remember that the better album was Use Your Illusion 1, but Use Your Illusion 2 had the You Could Be Mine from Terminator.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the big signal that came out first, was the Terminator, You Could Be Mine song. So people bought Use Your Illusion 2, and then they wanted Use Your Illusion 1, so everybody ended up buying
both.
Yeah, it was one of those things when that album came out that people were lining up at midnight to buy it, like an iPhone or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really bizarre.
I see here, this was one of the, Steven Adler, the drummer, was replaced.
Yeah, and that's the worst thing about these albums.
Okay.
Because he had a groove, like he had a real, Steven Adler's just a special drummer. He's a moron, but and kind of a loser. But you can't help feel sorry for him. I mean, everybody else was doing crazy hard drugs in the band too. He was just doing a little more maybe, and couldn't handle it as well, and had a couple strokes. He used to do speedballs in the bathtub and wrap his head in a blanket so that he could convulse without smashing his head open. So, you know, he was kind of pushing it, and they just couldn't deal with it anymore. But yeah, his drumming is, Matt Sorum's a fine drummer, but he just sounds like a drum machine almost. He's so clean and perfect that it's kind of a robot feeling. So, I mean, Appetite pound for pound is probably a better album, but I'd rather listen to
what you'd rather listen to this one.
Yeah, I'd rather listen, because there's just more depth. It's more like, It's like in the Stones, would you rather listen to Brown Sugar or would you rather listen to Torn and Frayed? I'd probably rather listen to Torn and Frayed. Kind of that's what the Illusions. I like all of the things on the Illusion albums that are by Izzy Stradlin. To me, he's the coolest thing in Guns N' Roses is Izzy, and nobody probably even knows who Izzy Stradlin is anymore because he doesn't play with them anymore. But every cool song that they did was because of him, basically. If I could pick a band, if I could have anybody in my band, I'd have Keith Richards, Izzy Stradlin, and Howie Epstein.
Wow.
Yeah,
that'd be... Okay, well, now, seeing as we're doing that, who would be your drummer?
I don't know. I don't know if it would... Somebody that just got along and was easygoing.
Someone who's not doing drugs in the bathtub.
Or, yeah. Do drugs. I just don't get too artistic on me as a drummer. Don't overthink it. I don't need anything fancy here. Just keep the beat and be in a good mood. When I show you a crappy song that I'm writing, pretend it's good for a while. And then if it sucks, I'm not a yes man, but just give me a chance and be in a good mood about it. Have a case of beer beside you and just play songs with me for a few hours and I'll find out that my songs suck later, buddy. Like, I'll learn it. I'll listen to the tape and I'll know they suck, but just don't tell me they suck or don't start changing them, you know? Like, I don't want somebody that's got too many ideas as a drummer. But who'd be good? Who'd be good? I don't even care. I like my drummers that I have. I like my real world drummers, like my buddy Burke in Kuwait that I played with. He was perfect. My buddy Craig here, phenomenal drummer. Just what I need. I get along with him, love him. We're good, man. We're awesome. Good. Yeah, I just want a guy I get along with that's cool.
Well, you should phone up GNR and say, hey, I got a drummer here that you could use.
Yeah, get my guys.
Phone up Axel and say, you know.
No, they're...
Recommendation.
Axel just replaces the band every 4 weeks, probably. Well, maybe not anymore, but this album is just... anything that Izzy Stradlin touches is just cool. He's the bluesy, gritty, Rolling Stones aspect of Guns N' Roses. When you hear anything that sounds remotely like the Stones, it's because Izzy probably wrote it on an acoustic guitar before he showed it to the band, or...
Okay.
He's the real... In my opinion, every good song is an Izzy song.
He's their Johnny Depp.
Okay, I can go with that.
I think Johnny Depp, I think when he started to kind of insert himself into the music scene, that's who I always imagined that he's watching tapes of Izzy.
He's trying to be Izzy?
I think so.
I don't... You know what? That's so true.
Maybe he's auditioning for the biopic.
Well, he could get the part, I guess, if he wanted.
So what's your deep cut here that everyone must listen to, Trevor?
Well, Dust and Bones is probably my favorite song on the album, but Dust and Bones and Dead Horse and You Ain't the First. I'm sure You Ain't the First is a really sexist song in a lot of ways, but it's like the best I Hate My Ex song ever. It's just mean. But it's like a country. It's just a country song in a 3/4 time with really great. The background singing is Axel, and Axel's just nailing these high parts like only he can. And Izzy's kind of mumbling through the rest of the song. And it sounds like it's recorded in a can, like somebody put a tape recorder in a Folgers coffee bucket. And then they just said, like, this, let's let this roll. Good. And that's my favorite. You Ain't the First is my favorite song. As inappropriate as it may be, I'm quite certain.
So, but it's in 3/4 time? Like, so, yeah. Like, could we waltz to it? Like,
yeah,
you know, could my mom and dad waltz to it?
1, 2, 3. I tried so hard just to get. And it's country, kind of, right? It's a country blues song on this crazy over the top rock and roll band's album. But it's the grit, it's the reality, it's the. It keeps them grounded musically, I would say.
Tough pick. You're well versed in your GNR.
Oh yeah, they were probably they were my favorite, my first really favorite band. Them and you know what? And that's why I never told you about worst albums because I remember we were talking about this is the next question. I don't know if I'm stealing your.
No, go ahead. Here. Like, where one of the things we want to do is like. So the idea of the whole podcast is your top five quarantine albums, but just for fun, what's your most embarrassing album buy?
And see, I thought it was an MC Hammer album.
Oh, so you've changed your mind.
Well, no, I can't find this album. And I looked through the title tracks, and I looked on YouTube, and I'm trying to see if I recognize any song off of it. And I think it's somebody else.
Oh.
I think it might have been some other rap artist from the early 90s that I got, and I thought it was MC Hammer, and maybe I'm remembering it wrong. Because I was trying to find which album it was, and you and me were even looking, and I listened to some songs, and I looked at the albums, and I looked at the art, and I don't remember any of them. I don't remember, so it can't be... So my most
You clearly don't have the album still with you then.
Oh, no, I don't even know where... I gave all my albums to Carter. Carter's got all my albums. He's got...
Have been a vinyl purchase?
No, it was CD.
It would have been CD, yeah.
But I think my least favorite album, my most disappointing album, as dumb as it is when I bought Poison's Native Tongue album. Which, now, if you're a musician, it's probably actually their best album because the clown of a guitar player wasn't in the band for one time. And it's actually, they have one of the better guitar players in the world playing on that album. And he basically wrote the whole thing too. And it's artistically, it's actually pretty good. But if you're like an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old kid that liked Poison songs, you don't want to hear what Bret Michaels has to think because he's a moron. If I want lyrics, I'm going to go listen to Bob Dylan, right? I'm not going to listen to Bret frickin' Michaels try and pretend that he knows anything about the world because he doesn't, right? So I don't need... And they were trying to like... this was grunge got them, right? And so they were trying to prove that they were smart or something. Like, they're Poison. Just give up. Say, we had some fun. We had some fun. We made a lot of money, and we had kind of no real talent. They took the Kiss formula and did it with even less, maybe, where you're just not good at anything except marketing yourself.
Yeah.
And they did that. And then they tried to put out a think piece of an album. I remember, I think I was in grade 6 when it came out, and I smashed it. I went and got it at lunch. And I think I smashed it at afternoon recess after I listened to it.
The same day?
Maybe. I think I smashed it in the back of the field in Barker School Ground in the muddy puddle at the bottom of the hill there. It was just a crap. I think I bought it again after because I needed something to listen to. I remember being just furious listening to that album, though. That's not what I...
1993, so...
Yeah. Ooh, ooh. Yeah.
It wasn't what you signed up for.
No, bad time for a hair band was 1993.
Yeah.
Real bad time. Bad time to be...
That was the end.
Yeah, it was a big train wreck of an ending. But that was probably my most disappointed album at the time. Listening to it now, there's actually some good songs on it. But who cares? It's Poison. Like, it's just, you know... He's a smart...
That's not how they're supposed to sound.
Yeah, and they're not supposed to try and have feelings. Like, I don't care. Bret Michaels, he's an idiot. And once you do something that, like he's great entertained. They were great. They had a good gimmick. But it's like a wrestler that tries to become real all of a sudden or something. I don't know. You know, if you were... Who would it be? Who would be, like, if the Ultimate Warrior...
Yeah.
Just a... Coke and steroid infused party.
Like went to the Olympics kind of thing or what?
Yeah, and then tried to be an Olympic wrestler or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, just shut up, buddy. Like, we got other people who can do that. You just put on the face paint, put on the armbands, and go do some coke and run around the ring and shake the ropes, please, please. Just, I don't know. I've been on a wrestling documentary kick, so.
Well, we all have our things to watch here in isolation, right?
I had a couple that were like almost on the grade. Like, I had some weirder one there. I could have picked an Oasis album. I like some Oasis. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. There's a guy named Alex Cameron who's like a new artist. His album, what's it called? I think Jumping the Shark, or his second album that came out. It's probably one of the better albums I've heard in like the last 10 years, but nobody knows about him. He's this hipster smartass from Australia. Worth checking out, though. But cool. Yeah, there was a lot of tough decisions, but I needed something big if this was going to be one of the earlier episodes, so that's what I went with.
Yeah.
Any other questions or ideas, you guys? I feel like I need to shut up. Clifton's making cookies already. He's got a cake tray.
Making cookies. Yeah, he's... you're right. It's Jumping the Shark. I just found it there, Alex Cameron.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. No, he's great. Really smart guy, weird. I could have put a Radiohead album on there. I could have... There's some pretty great stuff, but these ones are the ones that are most me, I would say, that have influenced me the most in some way or another.
So are we going to ask him, Clifton? Are we going to ask him, put him in order? Or I don't know. I mean, I think that's kind of unfair, but...
Well, I think what's the first one you grab? So you're on your quarantine island, and you have your five albums. What goes on first?
Probably Exile on Main Street. Probably Exile, and then maybe the Springsteen, then the Dylan, then Echo and Use Your Illusion, depending on what day I'm feeling it, I guess.
Yeah,
that's a good set list. Like, you know, you got your. You got some rock and roll, some, I know you don't like Happy, but then you kind of get sad a little bit there with Tom Petty, and then you rock out at the end with Gene Arnold.
Little Gunners, yeah.
It's a good set list, I think, so.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks, Trevor. Right, this has been fun.
No, I hope it works out when you kids are famous, you know.
Well, I hope not, because Brett Michael's going to come after us if you call him moron.
Yeah, I'm a dead man. Ooh.
I think you called two guys morons tonight.
Oh, then. I got lots more. If you ever need somebody to come on again and make fun of people for trying too hard, I'm your guy. Yeah.